Hey, everyone, this is Tom Silney of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. This is our final Device Talks podcast episode of 2025. Extraordinarily happy to bring this to you. And before we roll into the episode, I just wanted to thank everyone who has been a listener of our Device Talks podcasts. Kayleen Brown and I really, really enjoy bringing those stories to you, but it wouldn't be any fun at all unless you were listening. So we really appreciate that support. Thank you, of course, to everyone who's been a guest on our podcasts. We obviously couldn't do it without you either. But finally, thanks to our many great sponsors. This has been just a labor of love for me to put together this podcast network. And Kayleen Brown has just added so much to the program. Together, we're going to build some great things in 2025, but we can't do it without the support of great sponsors like the sponsor of this episode, Aptix. It's just extraordinarily gratifying to have folks out in the industry believe in this vision and to really see benefits from the sponsorship. So if you haven't sponsored yet and you've thought about it, reach out and we'll put you in touch with the right people. We're happy to work with you to craft your messages and to tell your stories. But thanks again to Aptix. They not only sponsor podcast episodes, but they're on our webinars and at our in-person meetings as well. And just they're fantastic people. And we're really, really happy to have them sponsor this final episode. So here's how the episode is going to roll out. We'll have the entire Mass Device News team on at the start to share their newsmakers of the year. And we've got some good ones. We've got some great ones, actually. Mine's a little off the chart, but I think I delivered at the end. We'll see. But thanks to the entire news team for sharing their stories, not only their stories of MedTech, but we've got a personal icebreaker question that I thought was particularly interesting as well. So I know you'll enjoy that. And then at the end of the episode, our keynote guest, of course, is the one and only Mick Farrell of ResMed. I love talking with Mick. He is, as I said in the interview, he just leaves it all on the field. He loves the ResMed story. He loves helping patients. He loves talking about how ResMed is on the leading edge and what it takes to stay there. And it really has, I think, been one of the more influential med techs out there with its connectivity strategy. So Mick is just a pleasure to talk to, and I know you'll enjoy that conversation. So thanks to Mick Farrell for joining us and for making this final episode of Device Talks Weekly Year 2024 so special. So thank you, everyone. Again, no podcast next week. We'll be back on January 3rd with our first podcast of the year. I'll be doing that interview over the break, and it should be a good one. Very happy to welcome this CEO back to the podcast. And that's it. All right, folks. Now we'll hear the conversation that our managing editor, Kayleen Brown, had with the CEO of Aptix.
Greg Tobin, CEO of Aptix. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kayleen. Glad to be here with you.
So, Greg, I know that Device Talks loves Aptix, but for those in our audience who may not know who Aptix is, will you please tell us about Aptix?
I would love to do so. Aptix brings together the aptitude and excellence of more than a dozen companies with a track record in manufacturing of more than 70 years. While our name is new to some, our history of helping customers solve complex challenges is not new. We're very proud of our legacy of entrepreneurship and our make it happen mindset. We combine collaborative, action-oriented spirit with deep expertise and specialized capabilities that include molding, extrusion, coating assemblies, and more. We have a global network of more than 10 locations spanning the US, Canada, Mexico, and China. And with our range of capabilities and geographies, we have the flexibility and depth to support our customers where they need it and how they need it. And always, our focus is on delivering not only exceptional customer service and the highest quality product, but also supporting our customers in manufacturing their competitive edge.
Perfect. Thank you, Greg. We'll hear more from Greg Tobin, CEO of Aptix, a little later on in the podcast. But if you want to find out more now, please go to aptix.com. That's www.aptyx.com.
All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Ready. Schumacher, how are you, sir?
Well, Tom, doing well.
Well, this is the final podcast episode, Device Talks Weekly Podcast of 2024. Actually, any Device Talks podcast of 2024.
That's right.
And we're very happy to have our entire news team here to share their newsmakers. So it's not the Newmarker's newsmakers this week, Chris. It's just the newsmakers. Are you comfortable with that?
I'm good with that. Okay. News team assemble. Here we are.
So we have our managing editor, Device Talks, Kayleen Brown. Kayleen, welcome.
Hello, hello.
And the senior editor, Danielle Kirsch of Mass Device. Danielle, great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got the returning champion, Sean Hooley, associate editor of Mass Device. I don't know why I called you a champion. It just seemed like a funny thing to say.
Works for me.
You're the champion of our hearts, Sean Hooley. And Jim Hammerand, managing editor of Medical Design and Outsourcing. Jim, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Hey, team. Always a pleasure.
This is going to be fun. So we're going to go over the newsmakers of the year. We're each going to choose our own particular item of news that we think is of import for whatever reason we think. We'll have a little bit of discussion about that. Before we get into that, though, I want to try one of those awkward ice-breaking questions that everyone hates, but then everyone loves because they kind of really did tell something about who we are. Favorite childhood holiday memory, like just one that comes to mind when I'm saying those words. And I'll go first because I brought it up and give you time to think. Because I was actually literally thought of this idea, like, well, it's not a very original question, but thought of doing this a few minutes ago. And the Christmas that came to mind for me was my dad had to work. He was a waiter, so he was gone for the day. We used to go over to my grandmother's house for Christmas Day, but my family was fighting over something. So we decided to stay home for Christmas. I got to spend the whole day just quietly playing with my toys, and then we had a nice dinner when my dad came home. And for some reason, that's like my favorite childhood memory, when people just left me alone. So I don't know what that means or how happy or sad that is, but it's consistent with who I am today. But I remember that day, and I remember the Jell-O cake we had for dessert. So that's my memory, and that's why I liked it so much. And I fear that I've shared too much. Sean Hooley, you're the champion of our hearts. What's your anything come to mind when I ask that question?
Yeah, I suppose there's a family in my hometown of Ipswich, Massachusetts, that does this big light show down their driveway. It happens to be in between the church we would go to on Christmas Eve and then my grandparents' house where we would have dinner after. So I just remember being young and getting driven down that driveway and seeing all the lights, and that's a very fond memory. Now that I'm an adult, when I drive through town and I see that light thing and it causes traffic, it annoys me, but as a childhood, it was lovely.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Way to get cynical at such a young age. Kayleen Brown, I'm sure you have a great story.
Yeah, and not to discount all of the wonderful memories in my childhood, probably the most memorable, to your point, Tom, was my first Christmas with my now husband, at the time boyfriend. He's Canadian, and we flew to right outside of Toronto. And I'm a native Southern Californian. I see snow on TV. That's about it. And we arrived, and their home, where we were having all of the festivities, it's this 100-year-old home that was brought all the way from Britain, one brick at a time, built outside of Toronto in Canada. It was snowing. They had the fireplace and the stockings, and everybody was actually being really kind and nice to each other. There was a lot of very politeness, which I wasn't quite used to. We read, 'twas the night before Christmas. Everybody was sitting around the fireplace, captivated. It was one of the most beautiful memories of my entire life and gave me insight into who my husband is and the incredible family that made him the man he is today. And I will always remember that and cherish those memories.
That's wonderful. I'll ruin that sweet memory with a question. Did your husband just like threaten his entire family? Like, you all better behave and be perfect because I really like this girl. Could that have happened?
Well, fun fact, Jeff's family, my husband, his family likes me more than they like him, and my family likes him more than they like me. So, no, I think that they showed their best selves for me, just like my family showed their best selves for Jeff. No threatening needed.
Excellent. Danielle Kirsch, anything come to mind?
Well, I was a child of the military, so oftentimes one or the other of my parents were always on deployment. But there were a few years where I would be with my grandparents and we would drive through the neighborhood and look at some of the Christmas lights. And then we would end up on base where my mom was on duty that night, usually Christmas Eve, on the ship, and we would go and we would have dinner in the galley and just have Christmas Eve on an aircraft carrier. And I guess those are some of my fond memories of my childhood from the holidays.
Wow.
That's a little more extreme than Toronto, Canada. And for me at the time, that was like another planet. So that's pretty amazing.
Did you appreciate the coolness at the time or did it just seem like Christmas?
I feel like I appreciated it more then than I do now.
Yeah.
Maybe because it got old after a while.
Everything does. That's a cool story. All right. Well, Jim Hammerend.
This time of year, I always think way back when I was a little kid, I was Jimmy. And every Christmas morning, we would get a Santa visit. He would show up at our house. It was always such a great surprise. And that happened for many years. And then it was only when I was older that I pieced it together that Santa stopped visiting the year that my Uncle Bob had a knee replacement. So I always think about that fondly. What a great guy that Santa Claus. Yeah. So good luck out there, Santa.
Having all those kids in your knee is going to do its damage, I suppose.
Chris, I like Newmarket? How Jim ties it back to medical devices. Well done, managing editor of medical design and outsourcing.
Everything comes back to med tech.
He is a pro. Wrap it up, Chris Newmarket. What happened in that tiny Ohio town where you were born? Or it could be anywhere you want. Yeah, any memory at all.
I was actually just thinking how even like before my wife and Kelly and I had kids, it was always like just fun doing Christmas Eve pizza. Like, you know, having a good pizza place, having a pizza, going, get a nice walk in somewhere, you know, especially if there was snow around. And now that the kids are old enough, I'm kind of thinking like, yeah, maybe this is the year we'll just go on a really good walk and enjoy the lights around the neighborhood. Maybe we'll make a homemade pizza. Maybe if we're too lazy, we'll order a good one and it'll be a nice way to go.
Those are great stuff. Thank you, everybody. I know I didn't throw it at you initially, so I didn't know which way it went, and it went particularly well. All right, well, now let's get into the medtech side of things. I think we had ChatGPT randomly order it, or determine the order in which we would present, and then, of course, Kayleen had to change it. But it's good. I think it's good. I think we're good with this one. But Sean Hooley, you're still leading off. You got to get on base so we can knock you home. What you got?
Sure. So, I suppose my pitch was sort of one story that turned into almost an overarching topic or theme. But one of the biggest stories, especially with regard to diabetes, was Abbott and Medtronic partnering to integrate specially made Abbott CGM based on the Libre platform for Medtronic insulin delivery devices. And it's something, you know, we see across diabetes with CGM makers and pump makers that sort of create these integrations, but with Abbott and Medtronic, it felt like a pretty big leap forward as just two of the biggest names in medtech. And then when you look across the industry, Medtronic had a few big partnerships. There's a one on stroke care with Philips, spine surgery with Siemens. You got GE Healthcare and J&J both working with NVIDIA on AI. So just a lot of big names sort of coming together, collaborating, and sort of expanding that medtech ecosystem would be my newsmaker.
It's something we've talked a lot about, Chris, on the podcast. Just
a lot of partnerships.
I always think in the scope of diabetes, we talked about it, I think, on this podcast before, but the rumor a couple years ago that Dexcom was looking to buy Insulet was always like stuck out to me as something that I thought, could that actually happen? And I'm not actually sure it could. I think the way forward might be these types of partnerships, and I'm sure that applies to a lot of different areas of medtech and not just diabetes.
Yeah, I guess another possibility would be medical devices becoming so technical that there are companies that are just experts in a particular type of technology and they can't be replicated. So if you can't beat them, join them. So companies that need access to good tech are finding other companies with good tech and working together on mutually beneficial arrangements. So good
stuff. If you can't do it yourself, work with the best.
Absolutely. All right, great stuff, Sean Hilly. Great way to start us off. All right, number two, the legend himself, Chris Newmarker. Chris, you do this every week, so you must have a doozy.
It's interesting talking about who could possibly just be the best, like work with the best. I mean, right now, when it comes to like soft tissue surgical robotics in hospitals, I mean, Intuitive is just really digging the moat right now. I mean, I think one of the biggest stories we had this year was, the unveiling and then the clearance and launch of the Da Vinci 5 system with just like a host of all these, new features. I mean, including like haptic feedback, for the force sensing, for the surgeons during, the procedures, which, I'm sure is going to get increasingly adopted. So, I mean, yeah, big news. And, of course, like Medtronic and Johnson & Johnson each, had news of how they're moving forward with their Hugo and Ottava robots. But man, it's hard to it's going to be really interesting to see how or if they can, compete against Intuitive at this point. Or are we just going to see all the competition in the, kind of in those ambulatory surgery center settings?
And Chris, something interesting we just reported on building off of that is this idea of Levita Magnetics, right? They're developing that magnetic system for robotics. And they just had a case where they said it was the world's first case where they used two different robotic systems at the same time for a single procedure. So they're saying that can maybe, improve patient outcomes. But I thought it was interesting because if a smaller company like Levita can piggyback off Intuitive and try to make it, that's a way to kind of advance their technology, get a better grip in without without actually having to formally partner with anything. So
we, of course, our approvals of virtual incision, all the different types of smaller robots we're receiving. Dexter from Distal Motion got approved. CMR's Versius got approved. So we're seeing movement into the ambulatory surgery centers. This has been an incredible year for surgical robotics overall. Yeah. Just really
huge year.
Been transformative. I mean, it's a completely different landscape than it was just 12 months ago. And shameless plug, I'll be doing a Device Talks Tuesdays look ahead with Steve Bell and Joe Mullings in January. So make sure you go to devicetalks.com to register for that. It's free. You can ask questions. I'm sure there'll be Joe and Steve aren't afraid to say things. So they're always fun to talk to and to learn from. So I hope you'll join us there. Good one there, Chris. Can't go wrong with surgical robotics. Kayleen, did you want to lead us off? Are you going number three? I'm sorry, you're going number three, right? You're next.
Well, if you don't mind me micromanaging you, Tom, I'd be very happy to go third. So kind of, we can't mute your sad face, and I'm just staring right at that. To kind of reflect what Sean was saying, I originally was thinking about one particular article, but it was sort of this arch throughout the year. And I don't think it's really a surprise to anybody knowing that my interest really lies in innovating for better health outcomes for women and other underrepresented populations. And 2024 has really been such a landmark year for putting more attention into getting women's health research. And you hear that phrase, where money goes, innovation flows. And that could not be more true for 2024. So we start off in February. First Lady Jill Biden, she announces the ARPA-H Sprint for Women's Health, allocating $100 million in advancing women's healthcare research or women's health research. Then, followed right after that, March of 2024, President Joe Biden signs an executive order aiming on expanding and improving that women's health research, and then boldly calls on Congress to make a $12 billion investment. Again, you follow the money. Then, a little later on in the year, you have the U.S. Department of Defense committing $500 million annually toward women's health research, focusing on those health issues that disproportionately affect women in the military. So you have this really federal look at advancing women's health research and how important that is. And then just recently, I mean, we're talking about a week ago, a December 2024 report from the National Academies recommended that the NIH establish a new institute dedicated to women's health research. And they're looking to appropriate $15.7 billion in new funding over the next 5 years. So hearing all of this, not just federal orders and this executive sort of commitment to advancing women's health research, we have the money that's proving it. Because we can all talk the talk, but unless you pay for it and you fund it, there's no walking the walk. So this has been the most exciting advancement of 2024 for me. Finally, really looking at real world evidence and looking at how technology can be adapted or tailored to better serve these diverse anatomies. The future is really bright.
How hopeful are you that like all this funding and all these initiatives that have happened this year, that there's enough momentum that it can keep going with the next administration? Because I mean, it's really an open question whether that something like this would be a priority.
I think that's a really fair statement. And if you want my real answer, I'm not very hopeful at all. But I'm not in particularly hopeful after seeing no change or relatively little change over the last 100 years.
Right.
But if I don't keep holding on to what is happening around me and trying to put visibility around that, put attention around that, try to get the people, use our platform and other platforms that I have the advantage and privilege of standing upon to try to bring awareness to this, get more people involved.
Yeah.
All of that awareness and attention is going to push the momentum forward. And at least at the end of the day, I can say I did what I could possibly do to keep that ball rolling. But no, I mean, you're talking about a systemic institutional issue that isn't going to be changed because of these exciting new initiatives and attention in 2024. Womp womp. Thank
Sorry, you. Sorry. I mean, at least it's something. It's something. And I mean, it's also, I recall like it was one of your articles from this year, it was talking about how, I mean, there was a whole period where women were not even included in medical studies, you know, and this wasn't like the early 1900s. This is like the 1970s. I mean, it's.
But no, Kaylee, you've done a really good job, I think, this year of through the panels that you've pulled together and some of the coverage that you've done in medical design outsourcing, shining a light on what the manufacturers are doing, that they're realizing how good it is for business, how important it is for patients if you can offer a better choice for different patients. Really, really good job there. And regardless of what happens at the federal level, I think the manufacturers know it's good for business, and they're going to keep pushing forward for that reason through their studies and different initiatives.
Thank you so much, Jim. And, you know, we're talking about how advancements happen because you're standing on the shoulders of those who did before. So to that point, I have to mention that. Yeah, thank you again, Jim. I feel really happy with the coverage and bringing up awareness, but I wouldn't have been able to do that without Danielle Kirsch, who really brought this focus on women in med tech to Mass Device and Medical Design and Outsourcing and to Device Talks. Danielle, chime in. What are your thoughts? I mean, I'm standing on your shoulders here.
Well, thank you for that. I am optimistic about the next few years in the sense that I think manufacturers and researchers aren't going to back down, and they're going to keep having women-focused studies happen regardless of what happens at a higher level. I think there's a good sense of passive resistance in the sense that everyone wants to do well for these different patient populations, because a lot of people have been historically underrepresented or have been in this environment that they felt like they couldn't trust their healthcare or things like that. So push in the last year has been really optimistic in my eyes. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how companies continue to progress this.
It would seem very foolish for medical device companies to ignore half of the people who use their technology.
Yeah, I agree. But you'd be surprised how much I don't want to say that they do, but how much a lot of the population is overlooked. I mean, we've seen in the past that some companies that develop pulse oximeters didn't take into account people who have darker skin tones and things like that. So it's just these things where you have to have people who look like the population you're serving designing these devices, because you can't. As a white woman, I can't speak for what black women go through at the hospital. I can learn from that, but I can't say, okay, this is what black women need to hear. I have to, that's a situation where executives will have to learn whether they need to stand up or stand back. And in situations like that, that's where they have to stand back and listen to people who are the experts. Just like we as journalists listen to the experts when we write our stories, we're not all considering ourselves to be nitinol experts,
right,
Jim. We're not experts on diabetes. We're not, I guess, trained necessarily. We don't have a degree in this stuff, so we rely on experts.
I mean, Danielle, just like 2 weeks ago, you did an interview with Michelle Tarver, the new head of CDRH. I mean, that article is going to be coming out on MDO soon. How much do you think having, an African American, woman doctor, as the top medtech regulator FDA, how much can that help, with, getting the industry to, really, really pay attention to all the different types of groups who use medical technology, need medical technology?
Yeah, the interesting thing about her is she has had her foot in both the post-market and pre-market environment. So she has an idea of basically the full scope of what the regulatory process is like at the FDA, but she's also been really passionate about diversity in clinical trials overall in the medical device industry. So her perspective on that is going to help when it comes to collaborating with medtech companies. And that's also part of the topic that I was going to discuss here and on my newsmakers was some of the studies that came out earlier this year on studies and surveys that were focused on women and diverse populations versus doing a normal clinical study. I don't know what normal is anymore, but yeah, she's been an advocate. So I think it's good to have advocacy in a leadership role like that. And she told me that patient safety is core to the FDA's beliefs. So that's also why I'm optimistic about the future. Even if things don't look so well for the rest of the administration, I think, like I said before, people are just going to, they're going to follow through on safety and things like that.
And I recall, one good piece of advice for our listeners was that, Dr. Robert Califf, the FDA commissioner who's departing, who is, Biden's FDA commissioner. One of his big pieces of advice for the industry was like, you're the ones who need to stick up for the regulators, for the professionals inside the agency, to make sure that, that the FDA continues to advance innovation. So, I think, whatever they can do to, work with Tarver and those under her to make sure we continue to have like a dynamic FDA that, enables innovation that can, get med tech, created that, helps everyone, all types of groups of people. It would be awesome. But my gosh, Danielle, you've written so much about those different like studies coming out this year from, the big med techs that are kind of like broadening the reach. What impressed you the most from those types of studies?
Yeah, so crazy thing. In April, Medtronic did a survey that revealed there were several barriers to women's heart health care. Most of the survey really examined women's perceptions and knowledge of risk factors in heart health and found that there really wasn't much knowledge among women about some of the risk factors and things like that. And then move forward to the fall, I was back in my graduate program doing research on health equity and communication between patients and hospitals to see how that improved communication can improve health outcomes. And then Abbott posted that it was going to expand diversity in clinical trials with new recommendations and partnerships. And Medtronic also launched a new study to address health disparities in structural heart disease. So there have been a lot of pushes for expanding that diversity and addressing health disparities, which is really good because there is too high of a percentage of the patient population that doesn't trust where their healthcare comes from. And that's not to say that's not related to the medtech industry. That's just related to a history of mistrust for decades and decades from certain populations. And then women have also notoriously been overlooked for certain things. You know, we don't know, a lot of women don't know that heart attacks present differently than they do in men and things like that. So I think companies like Medtronic and Abbott and Shockwave Medical doing these studies that are focusing on women will be positive for the future, and hopefully will continue in the new year. Like I said, I think companies are just going to do it anyway.
We're going to take a quick break from our Newsmakers 2024 News of the Year to bring back our sponsor, Greg Tobin, CEO of Aptex. So you just mentioned a 70-year history in manufacturing and a range of solutions. Would you mind expanding on that history and help us better understand how you support medtech customers?
Yeah, certainly, Kayleen. Our history starts with molding as a core strength, and there's nearly nothing we can't do, whether it's injection molding, dip molding, or blow molding. We opened operations in 1949 and became a leader in complex injection molding, supporting advanced applications in the life sciences with processes that include overmolding, insert molding, two-shot molding, and more. Some important keys to our molding success are our materials and tooling expertise. And as you know, you can't mold parts without tooling, and that is why we have best-in-class mold design capabilities, irrespective of whether we use our in-house tooling to support quick-turn solutions or our well-established external partners. And dip molding is another core competency. As a pioneer and leader in dip molding for over 60 years, we've grown our footprint through innovation and acquisition.
I am loving all of this, Greg. I want to make sure to give our audience time to learn more about Aptex by visiting aptex.com, APTYX.com.
Jim Hammerin, you're next on your Newsmaker of the Year. We all probably, if we were to have wagered on what your newsmaker would have been, I think we all would have been winners. What was your Newsmaker of the Year there?
Yeah, no big surprise here. I mean, we focus on tech and innovation at MDO, so the big story is indeed Nitinol. Convince me that I'm wrong, because we've seen billions of dollars worth of deals all the way through the Nitinol supply chain, right? From the raw melters, the companies that work with this alloy and turn into components or even finished devices under contract. And everybody's fighting for control of this material because demand's just booming for a wide range of devices that absolutely wouldn't be possible without. So we're talking minimally invasive implants, like these catheter-delivered brain-computer interfaces and heart valves, but also new systems and therapies for treating some of the leading causes of death. These are conditions like heart failure, the blood clots, hypertension, and AFib. So, you know, on hypertension, Medtronic's been treating patients for a year with its renal denervation system. But for me, pulse field ablation, that's PFA, that's the real standout this year that's enabled by Nitinol. So Medtronic reported the first PFA cases.
PFA's year.
Yeah. I mean, because Medtronic got the first PFA approval late last year, but they really started actually using it in patients in February. So that was Pulse Select. Now we've got Boston Scientific and J&J's Biosense Webster in the market, as well with Abbott looking to join soon. So why is Nitinol important for PFA? You've got these catheters, they go into the heart, expand into a predetermined shape, and then they generate this energy field to open holes in heart muscle cells. That's called electroporation. And it kills those cells to prevent AFib. And at the same time, these energy fields are special because they don't affect the nerve cells. So PFA minimizes the risk of harm to patients during and after these catheter ablations. So, you know, even from Medtronic, they've got that first system that was approved. But then they also won approval for the Sphere 9 mapping and PFA system from their Affera business. So that's really special because it uses Nitinol to deliver the ablation energy in a different way. So with Pulse Select and some of the other PFA catheters, you're using gold for the electrodes or platinum iridium to generate this energy field, but the Afera system uses nitinol to expand the tip of the catheter into this little sphere inside the patient's heart, and the entire nitinol structure acts as the global electrode. So beyond PFA, you know, you've got Abbott using it for its TriClip. That's the tricuspid valve repair implant based off MitraClip, just won FDA approval this year. And then even go back to surgical robotics, you know. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but we see nitinol uses a bit in actuators and the end effectors. But one of the companies I'm most excited about right now is Capstan Medical. So this is that structural heart startup. Former Intuitive engineers are leading it, and they're using they're developing a robot to place mitral and tricuspid kit valves with catheters. And, of course, you're talking about nitinol to collapse it. So, again, beyond the supply chain, beyond the actual tech that's being developed, look at some of the biggest deals of the year. And these, we've got J&J buying V-Wave, Boston Scientific buying Silk Road Medical, Edwards buying Genevalve and Endotronics. They're all working with nitinol. So I think that's a pretty good, compelling case for certainly the biggest tech story in med tech for the year. And really looking to see what happens next.
That's well argued. I feel like I just watched the end of a John Grisham movie. It was like one of those heart-pounding courtroom scenes, Jim. That's well litigated, sir.
It's like night and all.
I rest my case.
Case. No, well,
all right. So I'll wrap things up. Mine's a bit far afield, and I've been trying to talk myself out of doing it. But the killing of the United Healthcare CEO, and I don't want to get into details of that. Obviously, it was an abomination, and the response to it, I think, was equally abhorrent. In terms of the public support and outcry. But for me, what my takeaway from that and how it's connected to MedTech is just the people are crying out for better healthcare to the point where they're saying some really reprehensible things because they feel as if they have no other avenue to speak. And it's terrible that we're in that spot. And I think it sort of connects to the mission that all of us here, when we talk to folks in the MedTech industry as to why they're doing this, why they love being in this industry, why we all love covering this industry, is to help patients and to make healthcare better. And it's not an abstract thing, as we saw. It's a real thing. People are frustrated and scared. And I just hope everyone in the medtech industry always keeps that in mind when we're moving forward. You know what? Not to be Pollyanna, but this isn't just a business. It's a business with a mission. And I think that whole experience just showed, you know, where we are at with healthcare in this country and world. And not saying that terrible event needs to be something that we build upon, because it can't be, because it's a horrible thing. But I think we all need to just be reminded that what we're doing is important, and don't forget why you're all doing what you do. So I consider myself blessed to be covering this industry for as long as I have. I always wanted a job and a career that I loved and cared for, and I'm very happy that I came upon this and work with great teammates like you to tell these great stories. And so keep everyone out there listening, just keep up the good work, and keep in mind why you're doing what you're doing. So that's my newsmaker. All right. That wasn't bad. I didn't know where it was going to go. So this has been great.
Well said, Tom. Well said.
Well, I appreciate that. Any final words from the group, or do we just want to wrap things up?
I think we got a lot. I mean, I just think, you know, like, we only hit the tip of the iceberg about everything that happened in medical technology this year. And I mean, just to wrap it up, I mean, I feel fortunate to be covering this industry, and I too feel like just so fortunate that I'm, you know, working with this, you know, group of awesome people. And, you know, no matter what this crazy world throws at us, let's just keep on going. Let's keep on, you know, that's the only way you can make the world better, is just keep at it.
All right. Well, this has been a great way to bring you all in. I think my New Year resolution, if we're not quite there yet, is to get more of you all on the podcast more and more. Chris and I are bored with each other, and we need new voices on the podcast. So we'll definitely get more of our editors on to share more of these great stories. So thank you to everyone for a great year. Thank you for listening to our Device Talks podcast, for attending our Device Talks events, including our in-person events and our virtual events. I won't turn this into a sales pitch, but you can find it all at devicetalks.com. Happy holidays and happy new year to everybody out there.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Well, Mick Farrell, welcome to the podcast.
Tom, great to be back on your show. It's been a while. I was thinking it's got to be at least 5-7 years or something since.
It feels that way. I was just going to correct myself. Welcome back to the podcast. You were a guest of ours in 2021 during the COVID years. We were all kind of feeling our way around. You were actually on a webinar of ours as well, I believe. You came on.
I think that's why it feels like a century ago, because, you know, we had that COVID thing and supply chains and semiconductors and all of the craziness.
It's it's insane. And we're having it. I don't want to get into it, but there's talk of a virtual meeting at work for some holiday thing. And it's like, I don't want to go back to virtual meetings. Like we've done that.
Yeah. Well, I was just telling you, I did my first live on television on set interview a couple of weeks ago, and just the energy and enthusiasm of being there live and in person just makes such a difference. Yep. Let's not lose all the great things. We're in 140 countries, all great things around virtual, but let's get together as often as we can, because that's what humans love and that's where innovation happens.
Amen. Amen. All right. Well, let's get to your story. We covered it a bit 3 or 4 years ago, but you and I clearly have lost track, and I'm guessing some people haven't heard your story. How did you find your way into the medical device industry? I know you you'd start off, spent some time here in New England and at MIT, and sort of took some steps from there.
Look, my background really quickly. I started off in chemical engineering. Worked in the process industry, so mining, steel, chemicals. And I actually wrote a letter to Professor Charles Cooney at MIT to talk about starting a business in clean tech, green tech, mm-hmm. to sort of clean up SOx, NOx gases, and wastewater, and so on. And Charles was had a new scholarship program there. He said, you don't want to do a PhD with me. You actually want to do a master's in engineering and an MBA in this new program we've got called Leaders for Global Operations. So you get a master's in chemical engineering with me in the bioprocessing group, and you get an MBA. And that letter changed my life. And Tom, to this day, people, you know, reach out on LinkedIn, or people reach out in my company and ask for advice. And I try to not hear what they ask for, but what they really want. And that's what he read through that and pivoted my whole career. I then did an internship at Genzyme while I was studying there, wrote my thesis for them, and moved into forever into healthcare, and just fell in love with this overlap of altruism and the profit motive that we can have in healthcare. And I've spent the last 24 years here at ResMed helping the world sleep better, breathe better, and live their best life with healthcare technologies that people love, with healthcare delivered right in their own home.
That's amazing. Did you find yourself changing how you asked questions as well? Did you learn how to ask for what you really wanted?
That's a good one. And thinking of the other side of it too. Yeah, look, it's sometimes hard to discern because you're in the trees. You can't see the forest. And so what I try to do is have a network of mentors and others who can see the forest that I'm in the trees of. And so great mentors on my board of directors, from Carol Burt and all her experience at Anthem and WellPoint. I have board directors who've started up companies from nothing and sold them off to Roche and Johnson Johnson and so on. And I've got others who are, you know, co-CEOs out there. And also look for mentors well beyond. I joined World 50, Wall Street Journal CEO Council, and just talking to others and getting their opinions. So I do ask and try to discern better myself. But I think having that great coach, mentor, peers, I still even keep up with some old YPO buddies just to have people that you can talk about, personal, professional, and family, and really, really stretch out there, Tom.
That's a great look, great outlook. So ResMed is one of the higher profile med techs out there. You exist in I think the whole spectrum of our world, from innovation to manufacturing to all the way to the you're right in the home. You're not just stopping at the clinical setting. You're living with your patients and your customers. But give folks an overview of what ResMed does and where we are today with ResMed.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, as I said earlier, we help the world sleep better, breathe better, and live better lives in their home. But primarily, you know, I think there's a med tech audience. We take care of a bunch of really important and difficult chronic diseases. The primary one is sleep disordered breathing, obstructive sleep apnea. It's major manifestation. So sleep suffocation. 1 billion people worldwide have clinically significant sleep apnea. They suffocate during the night, and it impacts their cardiovascular system, their life. You know, they wake up tired and awful, but it also impacts their cardiovascular system, their chance of solid cell tumor cancer and diabetes and beyond. The other major disease state we treat is insomnia. 860 million people worldwide can't get to sleep, stay asleep, and get refreshing sleep. The third major chronic disease we take care of is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. And if you think of those three diseases, you know, that 480 million with COPD, a billion with sleep apnea, 860 million with insomnia, that's 2.3 billion people worldwide, one in four people on the planet that have a chronic disease that ResMed is the number one and uniquely capable of taking care of them. And we're really excited that, and they, sadly, the Venn diagram overlaps. You can have obstructive sleep apnea and insomnia, comorbid OSA and insomnia. That's called COMISA, which is a really tough thing to treat. And ResMed is uniquely capable of helping you with the breathing problem and the sleeping problem. And COPD plus obstructive sleep apnea is called overlap syndrome. And that's a really severe one. We have diseased lungs at the alveoli level, but also an upper airway that will occlude during sleep. So that's what ResMed does. We help 2.3 billion people. You know, and that's probably 85% of our business is in those three diseases. We also have, you know, 15% of our business is in, I said, care in the home, right? Because every CPAP, APAP, bilevel, patient interface system, even our cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia, digital health apps and MyAir apps, they're on a phone, they're in your home. We also run what I would call residential care software. And you can think of brands like Brightree or MediFox Darn Beyond. This is software that helps home medical equipment companies run their businesses to provide all sorts of care in the home. And that's the Brightree brand. We also have software that helps with home nursing, home care, and the MediFox brand is the number one provider of home nursing and nursing home software for Germany. So really big in the US and Germany in that field. So that's what ResMed does in a nutshell. We make the smallest, quietest, most comfortable, most connected, and most intelligent therapies. Tom, we have 28 million 100% cloud connectable medical devices sold into 140 countries. We have 20 billion nights of medical data in the cloud. And everyone, you know, I think last time I was on your podcast, maybe four years ago or so, we were talking about sort of the build up, the big data and where we're going with it. What we're saying now is, you know, we were sort of on the bleeding edge of digital health in tech, right? In 2002, 2004 with pagers. 2014, we reverse Amazon, put 100% connectivity and flipped the model for our whole basis of competition in competing in sleep apnea. But now we're at mile one of the marathon in digital health and the new basis of competition. Everyone's talking about AI, ML, generative AI. We've been doing basic ML and AI for years, and we've launched our first generative AI product into the space, a digital sleep health concierge. ResMed is not going to be the world's best in AI or generative AI, period, but we're going to be the world's best at applying AI and generative AI over 20 billion nights of data, over 28 million patients, over 140 countries to help the world sleep better, breathe better, and get the best care they can in the home.
Amazing. Now, and those numbers you give, I'm listening to another podcast about Meta and about Facebook and its growth, and they talk about the reach of Facebook across the world. And the numbers are only, well, we're in the billions, so they're larger, but they're slightly larger than the numbers you're giving right now. I mean, you're connecting with such a large swath of civilization. There's a lot of, you went over so much, I want to go in many different directions.
Let's
but
go.
Just looking at your universe, a universe as big as that, how do you possibly keep a company focused and disciplined? Because if it were me, I'd be going over there and then going over there and then going over there and going over there and see opportunity everywhere, which is great. But it can also be paralyzing if you pursue too many things at once.
Yeah, it's a good question. I was in a room of 20 CEOs and a crazy, amazing founder recently. So you may have heard of the company, NVIDIA, and the CEO, Jensen Huang, right?
Yeah.
So Jensen's there in his cool leather jacket, and I'm sitting there in whatever I'm wearing. And I ask the question. I make the mistake of asking an open-ended question to a live and living Steve Jobs, right? Founder, crazy founder, CEO, right in the room. I said, Jensen, you know, how do you engage with your board on digital health strata? And I don't even finish strategy. He's, Mick, you're wrong. I said, Jensen, in all fairness, I can't be wrong. It's an open-ended question. It doesn't have a yes, no, so I can't be wrong. He said, you are wrong. Because you don't just engage with your board on strategy at a board meeting. He said, strategy changes every millisecond, every conversation for me at NVIDIA. And the speed, you know, I was creating graphics processing unit chips for gaming, and I am now helping cure cancer. I'm helping put rockets into space. And he said, listen, just open your mind up. So, Tom, yes, I want to focus, but I want to keep that open-ended thought that digital health and med tech mm-hmm. can revolutionize the world. To your point, though, we have to focus. Consumer tech companies are coming to our field. I think there's a couple of huge mega trends hitting our industry. Tom, obviously, we talked about AI and Gen AI just earlier, but specifically for sleep apnea and specifically for ResMed, we've had just recently, last 6 months, Samsung got FDA de novo clearance for their Galaxy Watch to detect moderate to severe sleep apnea from the wearable, from the watch, right? Galaxy with a pulse oximeter. Apple didn't want to be one up to 3 months later. They come out with FDA clearance. They couldn't do the pulse oximeter. They're having a little bit of an IP fight with Masimo over there on pulse oximeters. So what they did was they used actigraphy from their Apple Watch, so movement sensor, and they loaded software on their last Apple 10 and Apple Watch 10 and Apple Watch 9 software upgrade from actigraphy that they can detect moderate to severe sleep apnea. Very high specificity. Hmm. And what's interesting about that, people say, oh, gosh, are you worried the competition is now no longer just the med tech companies? You're competing with these big consumer tech. I'm like, I'm not competing with them. I'm not going to go out and make a wearable. I don't, you know, I see an Apple Watch, I think, on your wrist there, Tom. I don't want to go and compete with a $3 trillion company like Apple or NVIDIA. I want to partner with them to understand how can we use consumer tech if there are a billion people worldwide suffocating. ResMed really proud with $35 billion in market cap and $5 billion in revenues, growing very well. But my reach is literally decimal points removed from Apple's. And if they can engage with more and more of the billion people worldwide who suffocate, then there could be a tidal wave of patients coming from Samsung, number one in Asia, Apple, number one in North America and Europe, to bring patients in. And by the way, Google's Fitbit wants to follow, Whoop, Garmin, all of these wearables are going to have, they already have sleep architecture detection. They're going to, so they identify insomnia for us, which is really important, but now they're going to identify sleep suffocation as well. And so what I'm preparing my team for here in 2025, right on the cusp, is a tidal wave of flow of patients. We've always worried about demand generation. Consumer tech's going to do that for us. Now it's demand capture, demand curation, and demand conversion that I can help them move from, oh, my wearable says I might have a problem, to here is a clinical pathway, and ResMed can be your digital sleep health and breathing health concierge to help you find a screening partner, find a primary care physician, find a specialist physician, get a home sleep apnea test, get a remote setup, and get set up on the world's leading therapy from ResMed to take care of you for life.
And we're back with the final segment of our interview with Greg Tobin, CEO of Aptix. We very clearly have a deep history in molding. Outside of molding, are there other capabilities that Aptix provides?
Yes, indeed. We also manufacture millions of feet of extruded medical tubing every year. We produce single and multi-lumen tubing that you'll find in interventional and other medical applications. And we're a global leader in corrugated and smooth spiral tubing that you'll find in sleep and respiratory applications. In fact, our team has a history of innovation in extrusion for the sleep and respiratory market. One example is embedded heated wire tubing. We have a patented process that allows us to place the wire very specifically within the helix. And why is that important? It delivers superior thermal performance, less rain out, and enhanced patient safety. And there's more. Our team has developed an automated method for wire termination, which delivers higher quality, reliability, and greater value. Overall, extrusion is a growth area for us, We are constantly adding capability and capacity to support our customers' requirements.
Those are impressive capabilities in molding and extrusion. I have to ask, is there more?
Yes, there is more. For over two decades, we've been a leader in supporting coatings via our Diptech Systems acquisition. We work from application to automation and equipment manufacturing and can support virtually any need. And having such a broad set of capabilities allows us to provide device assembly across our global footprint in white rooms and class 7 and class 8 clean rooms. And finally, I'd like to highlight that quality work begins and ends with people. You're only as good as your talent, and engineering expertise is at the core of everything we do. It's really the heartbeat of the company.
I love that. Engineering is the heartbeat of the company. Can you share more?
Kayleen, I would love to share more. So I mentioned our make it happen mindset. Making it happen is our tagline and also a core value. It came to us naturally. When we were working on the rebranding to Aptix, we had the realization that our team and culture make it happen. So how does this correlate with engineering? We like to say that there's more to making it happen than just making it. Our team is fully invested in our customer success. It starts even before submitting a quote. We take the time to fully understand the customer's objectives, identify potential challenges, and advise on design changes that could save time, money, and frustration. It's all part of earning trust and setting the stage for success. Once the project is a go, we remain intensely focused on getting things right early on to avoid costly corrections down the road. We know very clearly that our success depends on our customer success.
There's so much about that, Greg, that I love, love, love. Is there anything else before our time together is over that you would like to share about Aptix?
Certainly. So we are growing. We are actively investing in infrastructure, technologies, and capabilities. These investments allow us to better support our customers and the patients we jointly serve. When we tell our customers, your products are our purpose, we mean it. We know the products our customers make matter. We know it's critical to deliver on our promises to them. And at the end of the day, that's what really matters to us.
Well, Greg Tobin, CEO of Aptix, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
It's my pleasure.
A million thank yous to Aptix for sponsoring this episode of Device Talks Weekly. To our audience, please visit aptix.com. That's aptyx.com to learn more about how Aptix can help you manufacture your competitive edge. And now we're back to our interview with Mick Farrell, CEO of ResMed.
Do you see yourself or ResMed as the first device company that's really going to benefit from these tests on the wearables? Is sleep apnea and other sleep-oriented conditions, are they the, and forgive us, but low-hanging fruit for these companies because they're the easiest tests? And then as their devices get more and more sophisticated, others in the med tech industry might be following a ResMed playbook to sort of take advantage of that flow of patients coming in that could be coming.
That's a great question, Tom, because that sort of did happen in cloud connectivity, right? When we put in 2014, when people were just talking about the Internet of Things, we created the Internet of Medical Things, at least in MedTech, and put 100% connectivity in our generation ago plus devices there since 10 back there in 2014. I think if you look at the analogy that we're using, we're actually following because Apple Watch five and a half years ago put an EKG monitor, single lead EKG. And I think they made some mistakes. It was kind of good not to go first this time, Tom, because they made a little bit of a mistake. I think they had the sensitivity a little too high, so they had false negatives showing up at the cardiologist's office and the primary care physician from the EKG. Oh, you might have AFib. You might have AFib. And they caused some fear and I don't know, I'm old school engineer, do loops, if you like, of people like, oh, I think I've got this severe AFib problem. No, you don't, primary care. Oh, Apple Watch told me, oh, to the doctor, Apple Watch isn't a useful screen to them.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think what they learned this time from 5 years of that is now if you go to a cardiologist and say, I think I might have AFib, they say, get an Apple Watch and track that EKG. If you see this, and this sign, then come into my office and I'll put you on a 3 or 5 or 7 day Holter or even a 14 day Holter and really analyze you or one of the wearables like iRhythm and others in our med tech space. But I look at this and say, I want to learn from what that, those learnings were from the one lead EKG. And so now we're saying, as I look at Apple's screener, it has very high specificity, but not so high sensitivity. So it's not going to give you the false negatives. Show up and you don't have it. You're getting negative tests in the medical system. It's like 90 plus, let's say 90 to 95% specificity, meaning if it says you have apnea, you definitely have apnea, almost certainly have apnea, right? Like 90, 95%. So when those patients are coming in, well, those sleep-concerned consumers, let's be clear, sleep-concerned consumers are coming in, what we want to do is empower the primary care physician, the sleep specialist physician to say, I can't add 20 more beds to my 20-bed lab. What I need to do is scale. And I know this podcast is just audio, but you know, at the size of my fingertip for you listening, we have a home sleep apnea test that is sensitive and specific to diagnose sleep apnea. And there are so many other companies out there that have these simple wearables you can take home, and in one night, the doctor can know. Often cloud connected now, the doctor can know the next day. And so, scaling that home sleep apnea test, scaling the prescription process, and scaling the delivery of these amazing devices that are relatively low cost, 100% connected, and all they use is natural ingredients like air and water and pressurization, but they save your job, they save your marriage, they save your life, and that's what we've got to do for the billion people. So yeah, no, I think we're second this time, Tom, but I'm excited.
Good point.
after you know, EKG and AFib, that sleep apnea is second off the ranks, and that Samsung jumped out there with the FDA de novo and Apple followed. I can't wait for the tidal wave of sleep concerned consumers.
This is the apnea space more broadly has been, the CPAP space in particular, has been in the news a lot over the last couple of years, not for the best reasons, with the recall from Philips, and we don't need to get into specific about other companies, but how, I want to understand how ResMed responded to that. You had a company in the field putting out a device that is of the same class as yours. How is this? How did you view this as an opportunity to introduce your device to others? How did it create any drawbacks for you? You feel like it caused any people to change their perception of CPAP technology? What was the whole recall experience like from the ResMed perspective?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. I mean, look, ResMed was born in the sleep apnea industry. You know, my dad founded this company with, you know, $800,000 equivalent US dollars and an angel funding and an idea and seven people back in 1989, so 35 and a half years ago. And so we were always, and we were born global because it was born in Sydney, Australia, a big continent, but a little population of 20 million people in a big world of 8 billion. And so we always thought globally and thought where we're going. And so, Philips, I don't know, about 15 years ago, bought another company and came into the space. And, you know, a worthy competitor. We were beating them, you know, all the time from when they got in, taking share, because we make the smallest, the quietest, the most comfortable, the most connected, and the most intelligent devices. And so we were taking share. And that whole digital revolution from 2014, we'd taken more and more and more share. They followed with the cloud-connected device in 2016, 17, I think, DreamStation 1. And so we were growing and taking share. But there, when they had that recall, 2021, they announced it. Look, you know, we were number one or number two in 140 countries. Now we're number one in 140 countries, and they're back in many of those countries in Europe and Asia. They're having a hard time to come back because, you know, of what they did. I wasn't happy. I don't have any schadenfreude. I don't have any happiness in someone else's misfortune. They made some bad engineering decisions on the foam, and, you know, it looks like from what the lawsuits and all this stuff, they made some bad decisions from the emails that came out on decisions in their quality systems. And it takes a long time to fix quality systems, quality culture, and ResMed was always founded on patient first, ethics, integrity, do the right thing when no one's looking, and I just think those things come really importantly to us, and we've had recalls over the time, 2008 on our S8 line and on Survey Chef and in 2014, 15, and what we did is we executed excellent recalls. I don't think they've done that, and I think it's going to take a while to come back. But look, I look at it and say I spend very little of my time looking back at at that company or any of the other competitors in my field, because I'm looking forward to say, well, if Apple and Samsung can bring all these patients in, how can we be best aligned to capture those patients? And with Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk with these new GLP-1 drugs, talking about an indication for use from Zepbound, right? They finished their SURMOUNT-OSA study. They're going to have an indication for use to what I call half treat from their own data, at best 50% reduction in this apnea hypopnea index. But they're going to be, we're going to have two tidal waves, this consumer tech tidal wave, but with Lilly hopefully getting an indication for use before the end of this year, or I would assume, they will be marketing Zepbound to, you know, partially treat obstructive sleep apnea. So now you not only have the $3 trillion worth of market cap from Apple and, you know, maybe a couple of trillion from Samsung, you have $1.4 trillion together from Lilly and Novo on these GLP-1 meds. They're going to bring patients in to the primary care physician's office who are going to be asking questions about sleep apnea, need to get a diagnostic, and then they're going to end up, many of them, on combination therapy of CPAP, APAP, bilevel, and concomitant with you know, an injectable that can reduce their weight, diabetes impact, cardiovascular impact, and partially improve their apnea, but not fully treat them. And you need the CPAP to fully treat them. So I look at that opportunity a lot, and I love competition. We've got good competitors from Europe and Asia that filled in the gap from that other player. I look forward to that. Smallest, quietest, most comfortable, game on, compete every day. We'll fight that fight every day. But I'm looking forward to 2030 and saying ResMed has a goal to help 500 million people worldwide by 2030 with a CPAP, APAP, bilevel, a mask, a cushion, or a digital health solution for their insomnia, their COMISA, or a cloud-connected ventilator for the COPD, or software that helps them get world's best care at home.
Amazing. We had Jim Hollingshead on the podcast a bit ago. He's the CEO of Insulet now, and speaking to your point about your he helped you build. You dragged him from a respectable consulting career into medtech, and he helped you build out your connectivity platform. I don't, when people go into connectivity, sometimes I lose sense of, I have an easier time envisioning a valve or something like that. When I you get connectivity, it seems to get a little too ephemeral for me, but he did such a great job of conveying the importance of it. What has that connectivity meant for ResMed? You've covered a bit of it now, but what has it meant? Cover that briefly and tell me where you're going to go. Because we're talking about AI, and you mentioned AI earlier, but it just seems like with all the data you're collecting, with all the patients that you're having, You're gonna have just a, this is a softball question, but you're gonna have a mountain of information that you're gonna be able to draw from, and I would imagine innovate with. What does that future look like on the connectivity front?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and look, with no offense to Jim, well before he joined the company, we were on the bleeding edge of testing all that, and he was running strategy, and another dude was running the actual business unit, Don Darkin, and the big decision then actually was my CFO, who was saying, Mick, you know these 3G or 2G chips at the time, but we knew the exact COGS increase we're going to get from this cloud connected chip, right? 2012, making this call of what we're going to put into the 2014 thing, and we'd made so many errors in digital health experiment for 2002 with our first work with University of California, San Diego, Cal Stopnovsky, and some of the early work we did with pages. And we knew it could increase adherence, even with just the placebo effect, that the thought of connectivity could get you there. So we had 10 years of experimentation before we took that leap and said, no, we're now going in. It's now's the time to do 100% connectivity. So I feel like that same story's playing out again, where we've been in AI and ML for 7-8 years. We've launched products on our cloud connected platforms, on our Air solutions, on MyAir, on AirView. We launched our first generative AI product in Australia 2 years ago, and we now just launched it into the US, this start of this digital sleep health concierge. So I feel like we're experimenting a lot in this space. And to your question, it's just saying, oh, I'm gonna join connected. I'm gonna have a connected device. Many medtech companies have failed when you just say, oh, I'm just gonna connect it and create the ecosystem and see what happens. You gotta have a strategy, you've got to have a plan, you've got to know, do I take the labor cost down of setting a patient up on CPAP by 50%? Do I increase adherence on average in pharma? It's 50, 60%. We get maybe 60% if you're just, you know, one of our competitors, non-cloud connected, non-sophisticated. You add AirView, which is the doctors getting data. It goes up to 70% adherence. You add MyAir, which is patients getting their own data on their own phone every day. It goes up to 87% plus adherence. And so what are we going to do with our Gen AI algorithms? What engagement, Tom, when it becomes truly personalized sleep health, breathing health, care at home? And when you combine that capability of AI and Gen AI to really gamify things. I mean, look, we can learn so much. You mentioned earlier, you know, Meta and Facebook, and what do they do with Instagram and Facebook and all these social media? Even our good friend Elon over there at X, right? They want to gamify you. They want you there in their ecosystem, go up and down so they can sell ads and use you, turn the person to the product. In MedTech, we're the opposite of that. We want to turn a person into a healthy life and keep you de-identified, keep your data cyber secure, keep it interoperable, keep it safe, but allow you to get the benefits of that gamification, which is, I care how I slept last night. We have over 8.3 million people using an app called MyAir. They're engaging with their sleep health, their sleep apnea health every day, every morning. They're checking in. And that gamification of MedTech, I think, is the future. And then that personalization of it. So I think, I don't know, we're not at 2002 to 2012, like halfway through. I think to Jensen Huang's point, the clock speed of innovation is accelerating exponentially. And our ability with the new programming language being English, or actually whatever language you speak. I was 2 weeks ago in China with our live stream team. There's no reimbursement for our products in China. So I was live streaming on Alibaba Tmall, just talking about the origin story of ResMed while, an amazing 25-year-old ResMedian was selling just before 11/11 day. It was live translating my Australian American English here into Chinese characters and putting them up there. And the only reason I could tell it was correct was the numbers I'd say would come out there, you know, 35 years ago. Oh, yeah. And now I'm CEO. Oh, CEO. And it was like, wow. And I was watching daily sales move up. And not enough to justify my salary of being there. She was doing a much better job, but it did give her a little bit of a bump that, you know, you have a celebrity appearance, right? The son of the founder, the CEO, is here today. But what I learned from that is, if we're able to apply AI and ML for that personalized journey of engaging with someone in medical devices as they go to consumer, what can we do as we expand that over 20 billion nights of data, 140 countries? How can we get to more and more of the billion people worldwide? And I think this partnership with these megatrends of consumer tech, big pharma, bringing patients into the funnel will help not just ResMed in sleep apnea. It will help my friends over there, Dexcom and you know, the diabetes teams. It'll help my friends over there in cardiovascular, you know, Mahoney and Boston Scientific and Jeff over there with Medtronic. It's going to bring more and more patients into the funnel. Huge addressable market. One thing I do want to talk about for ResMed, though, is, you know, I talk about this innovation. We did something that hasn't been done for a long time. We put fabric on our silicone masks. And so you think about this, Tom. You sleep on beautiful cotton sheets. You put your bed on this beautiful fabric pillow, and yet you use a medical device every night, a CPAP, APAP mask, which is made of liquid silicone. And because that's what we did in the hospital, that's how you get a great seal and form the pneumatic stent. It keeps the tongue off the uvula, keeps you breathing perfectly. For 7 years, this is again back to that story of fighting on a technology before it goes mainstream. For 7 years, I would talk to this fabrics designer in our Singapore team, our innovation team down there. And we got her from the lingerie industry, from think Lululemon, like Fraser, right? We brought her over for a company like that. And every time I'd see these great prototypes of this fabric on silicone and I'd put it on my face and I'd say, I dream of this. Can I have it? Oh, well, we can't get it to manufacture right. We can't scale it to make millions, tens of millions of masks a year from this. We're just not there yet because the LSR machines, such high temperature, pressure, and speed. How can we get fabric to form and be part of that? We just did it. And it's called the AirTouch N30i, ResMed's first fabric technology CPAP mask. Wow. And, you know, you think, oh, what are the great innovations? Digital health changed the world with a 5G chip. Everyone's talking about that. But a simple thing like bringing a consumer idea of Lululemon or fabrics to the med tech industry. I think ResMed is looking beyond that. So it's mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, plastics engineering, anthropometrics, which is the study of dimensions of the face, and then also bringing in other industries like fabrics industries, consumer industries to say, where do we go? So I think the future's bright for med tech. I think the engineering talent that might be listening to this call needs to say, where do I want to go? ResMed is a great place where we bring all that sort of hardware engineering, software engineering together, and it's a great melting pot. I love being on the cutting edge. I don't like being on the bleeding edge, but I think we're just on that verge, Tom. 10 years right up for that digital health revolution in 2014. I think we're running up to where AI and ML are ready for prime time. We've got cybersecurity, we've got the privacy, we've got the interoperability. How do we personalize medicine for 2.3 billion people in sleep apnea, insomnia, and COPD? The journey's ahead. The marathon is mile one, and ResMed creates life-changing healthcare technologies that people love. And I love that someone sees my brand at that TSA checking in. Like, and they're like, they do the double take, Tom. And like, I said, oh, it's a groupie. And they say, are you ResMed? And I pause and I say, yes, I am. And then they say, and I say, how do you know this? Oh, my husband, my uncle, or myself, my life has been changed. It saved my job, it saved my marriage, it saved my life. Those are the three phrases that were said by Eddie Merck, patient one, to my dad 35 years ago. It's why he quit his job at Baxter, left his job as a tenured university professor, and got some money and said, let's take seven people and see if we can create this ResCare company that became ResMed.
That's amazing. And it's tough to ask one more question, but final question. I know you do have a plan, ResMed 2030. Anything we've talked a lot about the future here, but anything else as part of that plan here that we should know about where you're headed?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, there's a whole, for those who are interested, those financial nerds at investor.resmed.com, we've got a 4-hour thing, not just the CEO, but my next level of C-suite, my amazing new chief product officer. One thing I will say, chief marketing officer and chief revenue officer, one thing I will say is ResMed pivoted for this 2030 strategy. We created a whole new operating model to be product-led, customer-centric, and brand-enhanced. So we had our first ever chief product officer at ResMed, grew up in the company, ran our Asia growth market. So bringing innovation that's not just hardware and software, but pathway and funnel and understanding the ecosystem innovation. Our first ever chief marketing officer globally to say, actually, if we're going to get involved in demand capture, demand generation, we have to learn from other industries. And we brought in a huge new team under Katrin, our new chief marketing officer, Justin, our new chief product officer. And the third is our chief revenue officer. Before that, he was our head of sales for 70% of our revenues in the US for our core sleep apnea business. He's now taken over the other 30% to get to travel to Asia and Europe and say, actually, how can we drive this? One thing I'd say about our 2030 strategy, the three key takeaways. One, ResMed has a clear market-leading value proposition. We're just absolutely the number one in the space, but it's a huge market. Two, we've got a sustainable competitive advantage through the digital health ecosystem, the leadership there, but a strong, deep, and talented management team. And more than any of that, it's passion. It's culture of passion, of really caring for the patient. That patient one, that patient zero, 35 years ago. And the third is this exciting 2030 strategy. We're an innovation machine. We put, 7% of our revenues, so that's $5 billion revenues, $350 million into the hardware, the software, the solutions, and the pathway. And we changed the basis of competition. Tom, first time I was on your podcast, maybe 10 years ago, talked about this digital health revolution. Last time we talked about the pivot for ventilators and what we're doing in COVID to supply chain innovation. Now we're talking about this ML, AI, Gen AI innovation. We're going to change the basis of competition in our industry again. And the new competition's different. The new competition is, hey, MedTech, get ready because consumer tech's coming. You better partner. You better understand how patients are going to come to you. And get ready for pharma because I think this idea that you just get treated by a device or just get treated by a drug or just get treated by a pathway is ridiculous. It's all coming together. Personalized medicine's going to be there. And if you don't go to the consumer, they're going to go somewhere else. And if you go to the consumer with something that's good, they're going to love you and you're going to be part of their life.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's a great way to end this conversation. I always enjoy talking to you. You leave it all in the field when we go back and forth, and I appreciate that. Thanks for sharing ResMed stories again, Mick. It's
Hey,
great to
Tom,
talk to
it's
you.
great to talk with you again. And hey, next time to get that energy like we had in the live thing, let's do it in a live studio so we don't have these problems like logging in and all that. I can have cool headphones like you, and you can have perfect sound quality from me. Cheers, Tom.
First time I've heard these described as cool. Thanks,
All right,
Mick.
See you later.